I'm Kathy Yenli, and you're listening to Farm to Bottle, a podcast about Canadian brewing ingredient producers. This episode, we're chatting with the BX Press Cidery and Orchard in Vernon, BC. So I was driving my family from Vancouver, BC to Shiloh, Manitoba mid-June and got to drive through Vernon. I'd never been to the area despite living in Vancouver for over 5 years, and I wish I did. Vernon, BC is about a 4-hour, 45-minute drive northeast from Vancouver, which is a totally doable drive, considering I will now drive up to 12 hours to go judge at a homebrew competition. Vernon has about 40,000 people and is home to a craft brewery, a distillery, a cidery, 8 wineries, and a handful of fruit orchards and U-picks, making Vernon the current place that I want to retire at. I love U-picks. So here's my chat with Missy Dobernig from the BX Press Cidery and Orchard. My name is Missy, and I'm the owner and cider maker here at the BX Press Cidery in Vernon. My husband is the third generation to grow apples on this land, and we started the cidery 5 years ago in 2013.
Okay.
The orchard has been in the family since 1946. This is my father-in-law back in 1946.
Nice.
And that was shortly after they had moved here. We still have all these boxes and ladders, although we only use them now decoratively, obviously. This picture shows the owner of the orchard before my in-laws had bought it. This is William Pound. He was a very prominent early Vernon taxidermist, and in his spare time had the orchard. I don't know how he managed that because
it's like a full-time job.
We are light to dark 7 days a week. But when you look at this picture, really, you can see that not much has changed in orcharding, in that we still handpick all the fruit. We still use ladders. It's all just a lot of manual labor. We do still have some really big old trees like these ones, and that's been part of the benefit of starting the cidery, is it's allowed us to maintain the diversity of style and planting of tree. Mm-hmm. Most orchards now, in order to be profitable, you need to be on a high-density super spindle style, of which we do have about 10 to 15 acres of that.
Okay.
Ambrosia, Honeycrisp, those apples, and they go to BC Tree Fruits.
Nice.
But we have been increasingly able to use our older trees for cider, for Spartan Max, those varieties that have good acid in them. And the trees that aren't as good for cider, like Red Delicious and such, we're grafting them. So it's allowed us to move from about 7 varieties of apples to close to 30.
Nice.
And they're really cool old apples that even as third generation orchardists, we didn't know existed until we started down this path. They have names like Kingston Black, Bulmer's Norman, Garlington Mill. And when you eat them off the tree, their common name is spitters, because that's what you want to do. They're so bitter or tannic. But when those really shine is when you ferment them.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess increasingly, as we evolve in our cider journey, we believe that the best cider is made in the orchard. And because we grow all the apples that go into our cider, whether it's just a common apple like a Macintosh or these gnarly old cider varieties that have more tannin, we're able to control how long they're on the tree. So rather than picking them half ripe, which is where most apples that go into other people's cider would be, because they're actually picked for the packing house for storage. Ours, if we know they're for cider, like this block we're sitting in right now, these apples will let hang until all of the starch in them is converted to sugar. So that means you get more flavor, more sugar gives you more alcohol. So with the summer like last year, which was really hot, really dry, we had no rain, all the sugar was concentrated in the apples. And now our ciders, this vintage, are between 7 and 8%. So they're a lot higher alcohol percentage, but we're committed to not watering anything down. And just like wine vintage, our ciders do change a little bit year to year because they are a true orchard-based cidery.
Very cool. So what made you start the cidery 5 years ago?
That's a good question. Cider's kind of been with me for 15 years almost, in that I would make little test batches. I always just had this gut feeling that it would be part of our future, but it wasn't until 2008, 2009, when apple prices across the province were just decimated, that my husband and my father-in-law, being a family farm, we were able to have a discussion that we needed to do something value added with the orchard if Dave and I were going to be able to continue it in the long run. let alone pass it on to our children for a fourth generation, if any of them would like to do that. So we have a pretty strict contract with BC Tree Fruits that limits what we can do with our apples, but we are allowed to process them ourselves. And so we started investigating cider. I made more test batches. I went and took some courses from a UK cider expert who was coming over to Washington occasionally to teach. And then, yeah, just started making more and more test batches. Most of them horrible and fairly undrinkable, but those were the best teachers, those batches, actually, because I would really dig into why they hadn't turned out well. Mm-hmm. And I still pull from those lessons in our cider making today. And I'm able to make good cider now, thankfully. Nice. So we finally got to the point that our test batches, it was just taking over my life. And we said, either we need to jump in and do this, or we need to move on and do something else. And so we obviously decided to jump in. That was in 2013. We didn't have a suitable shed even on the farm to start in. So we built the cidery and started with 6,000 liters. And now 5 years later, we're regularly producing 40,000, and with this addition going on that you can probably see, or you can hear the hammers in the background, we'll grow a little bit more. But what I'm really excited about the new space is it's going to allow me to make more interesting ciders, like in bottle fermented ciders. I'd like to start playing and learning how to make sour ciders, like sour beer. I've tried some really delicious ones out of the States, and we'll be able to be open year round, so that'll make a big difference as well. So
right now you're only open during the summer?
Yes, May till October.
Okay.
And then the space kind of gets taken over for production all the winter, all the pressing, fermenting, bottling. So we do everything on site here, right from growing the apples. We press them all ourselves. They're fermented. Actually, this picture, I can send you the graphic if you want, but it's a really whimsical depiction of our process.
Awesome.
So of course, starts with apple, because that's what it's all about, is good quality apples and good variety. So that's another difference with an orchard-based craft cider like us, is that we care about the blend. So rather than just getting any apples in, we want to make sure there's a balance of acid, tannin, and sugar. And the cider apples is what gives us the tannin. It's like if you think of a wine grape compared to a table grape, you're going to get wine out of any grapes, but you won't get a good wine unless you have that balance. So not a lot of apples in themselves have that balance, but if you blend different kinds, you can get that. So our apples that we've let hang on the tree a little longer are washed. We ground them up into pomace, and then they're pressed. We use about 6 different kinds of yeast, not in the same batch, but in different batches. And then when you blend them together after they fermented, you get different aromatics and flavors, even if you're using the same apple variety.
Okay.
And that's a really fun way to add complexity by carefully choosing yeast for what they'll do with the apples. We then age our ciders anywhere from about 6 weeks to 9 months. And again, that depends on the final product and what we want it to taste like, because they do change over time, just like a wine. We carbonate a bottle, and then we pasteurize as well. And pasteurizing is a key differentiator and something a lot of people don't know to ask their cider maker if their cider is pasteurized or not. And if it's in a glass bottle, it's either going or a can, it's either going to need to be pasteurized or potassium sorbate will have had to have been added. And we like to keep our ciders free of any chemicals and keep them as natural as possible. So heat is a natural process. And even though it's more laborious, it's worth it to keep the integrity of the cider.
Very cool.
Mm.
So do you add, with this orchard being in the family for 3 generations, so were there already cider varieties in the orchard?
Not specific cider varieties, but the crab apples that we use in about 10% of Hostler, which is our cider made just from modern apples like Spartan, Mac, Honeycrisp. But by using those crab apples, we are able to get some tannin and complexity. And those have always just been pollinators. So they were always just here for the flowers in the spring. But it's pretty awesome now to be able to use the fruit as well, which previously a few local grannies would have come and made some jelly out of them, but now we actually kind of hoard them all because every drop of that juice is really precious.
Nice.
And then the cider apples, we've grafted almost 5 acres of our red and golden delicious trees over to cider apples.
Wow.
Yeah, it's awesome. We have a lineup of cideries wanting to buy them, but at this point we're still able to use them all ourselves because it's a problem in the industry as cideries are growing that there's not enough true cider fruit,
mm-hmm.
but apple growers are hesitant to put them in because they're really hard to grow.
Right.
Other apples like a Gala or a Macintosh, part of the reason they're popular is because they pack well, they store well, they crop consistently, they maybe all color at the same time so you can pick them all at once. I mean, those are all reasons without even taking flavor into consideration, right? Where cider apples are grown primarily for their flavor and tannin, which means as apple growers, some years you get a really heavy crop and the next year you get none.
Mm-hmm.
They're more disease prone. You don't get the same tonnage that we do on our other apples. And so I don't blame other apple growers who aren't also making cider for their hesitation to put in cider varieties, because they're really a whole different experience than growing eating apples.
For sure. So with apples, from what I understand, you can't really grow from seed. You almost always have to graft it.
Yeah, that's actually true if you want the same variety as what was your apple. So that actually pulls some neat cider history in that Johnny Appleseed was very religious. And you've heard this, I can see.
A little bit, yeah.
And considered grafting to be sacrilegious for whatever reason. And so he would only plant apple trees from seedlings, and would travel west across North America, and then settlers would be able to buy those year-old saplings and make a claim on the land. The government would recognize an orchard as a land claim.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it was really, cider really paved the development of North America. And the problem is, though, is that if you grow an apple from a seed, let's say you have a Honeycrisp, you plant the seeds, you water them and take care of them for 3 or 4 years, and you think, yes, now I'm going to get a Honeycrisp. You're not. You're going to get something that's probably bitter, sour, tannic. At best, it might be bland, but it'll be different. And so then the Honeycrisp. So for cider, though, that actually provides an opportunity, because a lot of cideries now are starting to just plant seeds and see what they get from them. Mm. And then if it's something promising for cider, they're able to graft from that seedling and get some true North American cider varieties.
Yeah.
Because obviously here, it's like 30 today, and we're not even into summer yet. An apple that traditionally has done well in the UK climate is maybe not going to do so well in the Okanagan, and that's really all we have to work with.
Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. For sure. Are there heritage, like, BC cider varieties in the area?
Not that I know of. I know our friends out at Twin Island Cider and a few of the cideries out there are using a lot of these heritage trees that were planted in like 100 years ago kind of thing, but as far as being like a native BC variety, I don't believe so.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Yeah, so when you're making a cider, what do you take into account?
Good question. The quality of the fruit, for sure. And again, I'm thankful that we're able to 100% control that ourselves. And getting a good blend, primarily for acidity, so that it's going to ferment. I never add any powdered malic acid or anything to balance that. We have such a wealth of apples. Like, we grow over 1 million pounds here, and I only use about half of those in the cidery. So as long as I'm planning properly and making sure I have enough acidic varieties in my fermentations, I never need to use malic acid, which mm-hmm. is nice. And so that would be one. If it's a cider like our Prospector, it's only going to have cider apples in it. So I have to make sure those are kept separate. I guess just that. And then yeast strain. So I like to have tanks of different sizes so that rather than just doing one or two really large ferments, I can have different strains of yeast. And then those ferment to dryness. And then when they're blended, you get different aromatics and flavors, even if the base blend of apples was the same.
Actually, I'm very surprised because I don't think I've heard anyone doing it that way, where you have the same juice but different yeast. Because I do know that yeast brings out different characteristics of each
Absolutely.
Of the same thing.
Yes.
But I've never thought about blending it that way.
Well, and what I'm looking forward to as we grow and I have room to have an assistant cider maker and a little more space now is to actually start doing some trials with those yeasts. Mm-hmm. Because at this point, I've just been so overwhelmed keeping up with making it that anytime I've tried to separate and isolate carboys and do that, I'm not able to give them the attention they deserve because I'm obviously not going to risk our main fermentations on those while I play with those. So That's exciting for me going forward. And also with a little more space, I'd like to try doing some wild fermentations that use the yeast that's just naturally on our own apples. And I've tried some amazing ciders with that. As our production of our cider fruit comes up, I'm going to have more interesting fruit to do that with as well.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. I've heard that traditionally in farmhouse cideries, you know, they'll harvest the apples and they'll actually leave it in their basement to store for a while. Do you guys do that at all?
We do some, mostly just by necessity if our tanks are full, they'll sweat. But because we're able to let the fruit hang on the tree a lot longer and ripen. I mean, when you think of a tomato ripened on the vine compared to off, you end up with a lot more flavor just right off the vine. I know apples aren't quite the same, but some of our varieties will let sweat if we need to, but generally we just go straight. Like, they'll sit a week or two maybe just waiting for their turn at the press. But
for sure. So what kind of press do you guys have?
We have a Krautsmeyer belt press. We started on a traditional rack and cloth, which we actually sold to Twin Island, and that was fantastic until we hit about 20,000 liters, at which point I just found it too much, because we needed like five or six of us going full tilt, and the juice quality was good and the yield was actually pretty good, but I wanted to move to something that was a little bit less labor intensive as we grew. So we're now on a continuous belt press. I can show you it. It's in the tasting
room
right now to keep it safe from production. And if you're by in the fall, we'll actually have it running right in the front on the press pad, so you'll be able to see it working. But it's fantastic, and it's their smallest unit, but it's big enough for us right now.
Very cool. Hmm. How far do you guys distribute to?
We distribute to liquor stores. I guess the farthest would be Vancouver Island.
Okay.
And unofficially, we send cases anywhere in Canada to individual consumers.
Nice, so, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. What kind of apples are these?
This is a Macintosh block. I'm not sure if you can tell. I can see you've since spent some time in orchards, but
a little bit.
This is quite wild. That's another benefit of the cidery, is it's taken a lot of the pressure off of my husband to have every apple looking perfect. Mm-hmm. So it's allowed the orchard to just kind of rest a little bit every second year. It's pruned now if it's a block for cider. So most of our Macs and our Spartans do go into our ciders.
Nice.
We have the ciders that are very traditional. Like, we have one made just from golden russet apples. We have another one made just from cider apples. But a lot of our ciders actually use other BC grown fruits, and although those might be sacrilegious, or maybe that's not the right word, but you know, considered an abhorrence to a true, like, hardcore ciders only apples person, I totally respect that. But on the other hand, starting this cidery was a way to add value to our existing orchard. So rather than having to cut the entire thing down and start from scratch, we wanted to use the fruit that's already here, honor the root systems that's already here. And we make some really popular ciders from these apples that are still real. So one I can pour for you today is our lavender raspberry. Oh, it just came out today. The lavender was just growing a half a kilometer from here. The raspberries are grown in BC. Still over 90% of what's in the bottle was an apple growing on this property. And so we still feel very proud of
for
those
sure. ciders.
And they're delicious, and they give us a nice variety of products. So
how many trees do you have here?
Oh, I don't even know. Thousands and thousands. Because here, you can see these are on like 20 by 10 spacing or something. And then we have other ones higher up that are even bigger and farther apart.
Right.
And if you move either north or south in the orchard, you'll see high density that are on a 1 foot by 11. The trees are so small they can't even support themselves without a trellis. They're high density. They look like a vineyard almost. So those ones, we've got a really nice mix of tree densities, which is one of the few orchards still in the valley to do that. And that's again
awesome.
Because we have the cidery.
For sure. That's very cool. Awesome. I'd love to see your press thing.
Sure. Yeah, let's do it. Oh, I didn't even talk about the history. If you want me to.
Yeah, let's go for it, actually.
About that. So, I don't even know if I can do that, I think. Okay, so before the farm was owned by William Pound, who was the taxidermist before my in-laws. It was actually the 6,000-acre parcel of Verdon was owned by a company called the Bernards Express. And they used it as a horse ranch. They only wanted semi-wild horses to pull their stagecoaches. And these stagecoaches ran up the Caribou Road to Barkerville during the gold rush of the 1850s and 1860s. And it was a really significant time in BC's history. And Francis Jones Bernard, the founder, actually had a monopoly on the transportation going out and the gold, gold going out and the mail coming in. So this led to this horse ranch here in Vernon. He drove 400 nearly wild horses up from New Mexico.
Oh, wow.
And started the program here. So when you come for a tasting at the cidery, you would get to try, say, the Prospector, and you'd hear the story of the Prospectors, or the Crack Whip, and you'd hear the story of the Stagecoach Drivers. We have a great cider called the Bandit, which has an awesome story, and they're all true stories from that Caribou Gold Rush history. So it's a whole other aspect to what we do, is celebrating that history. I guess the direction where our heart is going with the cidery is to celebrate connection. Mm-hmm. So making the cider keeps the connection to the land here vibrant. Sharing those stories keeps the connection to our history vibrant. And by adding next year a picnic area, even just sharing our tastings in a group like we do, cider also helps us have our connection to one another. So
that's very cool. Nice.
This is our press.
Oh, okay.
It's set up in the right order right now. We just have it here to keep it safe from construction.
For sure.
But we've got their wash, go up the auger there and ground up, and then they're dropped in the hopper here.
Nice.
The mash then gets a ride through those rollers. There's a belt that would go on there.
Okay.
The juice is collected at the bottom and then pumped into the tank.
That is very cool.
Yeah, we also compress, I think we're going to get some Hascap berries here to do an experiment for this summer with cider, and we can run them through it. So,
very cool.
Missy then takes me to the back of the shop where the production area is.
So our tanks right now, although with the new space, all have dedicated fermentation tanks, but we use these both for fermenting and then for bottling in the spring. So the space is kind of in use all year. We had to take a bit of a break right now because of construction, although we were just bottling last week our hopped cider, which is
I was just going to say, it smells really like hoppy in here.
Yes, and that's because we just had that one, so there's still some lingering aromatics. But we have a counter pressure filler. We've named it Cabby because it was the same amount of money as the cab tractor that Dave has wanted for decades, but he's patient, so
nice.
So the juice would start for about a month to 6 weeks in here fermenting, and then we would rack it into either the oak barrels, if there's a free tank, into stainless, or we use the 1,000-liter bag in a box because there's no oxygen CO2 transmission through there for maturation.
Yes.
Let it just sit for a few months, and whatever further reactions are going to take place, because it is a living thing, the cider. And then it's put back into the tanks, blended with whatever other fruits or the hops at that stage, and then bottled. We do a few ciders we co-ferment. So we have a vanilla plum that comes out for Christmas. It's delicious.
Oh, my God.
The plums are co-fermented. And then this spring, our blackcurrant cardamom was actually a co-fermentation of the blackcurrants and the apples as well.
Nice.
And that's another approach we can take with it.
This is very cool. So you just have four tanks to work with, basically. Mm-hmm.
Just these four right now. I've just got phone calls all morning actually about some new bigger tanks for the new space, which will be fun. But I like having a variety of sizes because I'm able to, say, isolate crab apples or isolate different yeast, things like that, rather than just putting everything through in large
for
batches.
Sure. Mm-hmm. This is very cool. So how many people work here?
I've got this just as of March, my first full-time year-round, and another girl that's part-time year-round in me.
Oh
my
God.
So yeah, it's small and very, very women-powered, so I don't want to discount what my husband does in the action because he's out there all the time in the orchard, but it is his own business as well. And a couple of token males, my brother now works for us too at the farmer's market. It's really fun. I really love that. I'm just so amazed. Everybody who works for us just cares so much about what we're doing. And we've got such a great camaraderie between us all that it's just delightful to be here. And I'm so grateful for them and their own passion and care that they put into what we're doing.
This is super awesome. So besides, how many tanks are you hoping to add into the expansion?
Eventually, probably three. But the new expansion has a higher roof. Our ceiling, so we'll be able to go taller, and that way we're not giving up floor space.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also excited to start, I've been making some contacts with some of the wineries, so start doing more with barrels as well. We'll have more space for that. Fermenting in the barrels, maturing in the barrels. We've currently done that with our whiskey barrels for one product, but I'd like to, the oak and the cider, if done right, has really neat interactions that have a lot of potential. And yeah, this space will be just for bottling them.
Very cool.
And that's the end of the episode. You can find more about Missy's fantastic ciders at their website, thebxpress.com, on Instagram, at thebxpress, on Twitter, at thebxpress, and on Facebook, thebxpress. Once again, if you've enjoyed this episode, please rate it on iTunes and or recommend it to a friend you think might enjoy it. Until the next episode, keep supporting your local growers.